News Talk 1400 KFRU is proud to present the KFRU Heritage Series. It's a one-hour perspective on the events and the people whose lives have contributed to the heritage of Boone County. Listen each Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. The KFRU Heritage Series. From News Talk 1400, KFRU.
We've done the Heritage Show for going on about a year and a half now. And John Duncan is the producer of this, and he came up with the idea. And I've really been a treat to meet a lot of people and to talk to many people. But John can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that we have ever done a show that will concentrate probably as much on eating places as we might today in this interview, because we have a man who is synonymous with several of the good eating places in town. When many of you will remember these and will want to hear what Dick Walls has to say. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for coming in and agreeing to join us. Thank you.
Thank you.
So before we started our program, you brought up Italian Village and said you worked at Italian Village. So that's a good starting point. Let's start there, if that's okay with you. Is that all right?
That would be fine. We will start with the year 1960.
All right.
It was my arrival in Columbia, and I worked at the place called the Italian Village, which was very popular. The forerunner of it was Gabler's Black and Gold, which is still very popular in the annals of the University of Missouri. So anyway, I worked there for about 2 years. Then I got the opportunity. One of the fellows that owned it and managed it was interested in starting another restaurant. And he was looking at the other side of the campus. And people said, oh, no, don't do that, don't do that. That'll all be, the university will take all that over someday. Well, needless to say, they took over where we were at the Italian Village. And proud to say, 50 years later, I'm still at the Heidelberg.
The Heidelberg was the other one you're talking about. Go back to the Black and Gold thing that you said. What Black and Gold was that that you said?
The name is Gabler, was the name. And I think later on they gave this building to the university. And they were very popular. The Black and Gold was very, very popular at the university.
Is that like a student bar?
Bar, restaurant.
What was the Italian Village?
The Italian Village was restaurant, bar, and sold a lot of beer, but also sold a lot of spaghetti, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, the location where the Italian Village, was it a big place? Was this a huge place or a cramped place?
Well, it was fairly large. We could probably get a couple, 300 people in there. Wow. We had a back area which we could rent out or overflow, et cetera.
So where was this?
This would be now probably just to the north of where Beetle sits at the Alumni Center. And there was a lot of businesses through there then.
You said you went back to look and see if you could remember what street it was. Would have run north-south. It would have been facing the street then that goes right in front, right between now the Alumni Center and the lawn, the south lawn of Jesse Hall.
No, it would be facing Maryland.
Maryland Street.
I think that's Maryland, isn't it? It runs right in front of Jesse Auditorium there.
I don't know, someplace. I think Maryland comes up along there, but Gentry is no longer.
No. Gentry is definitely gone. Gentry was just a short street which ran from Maryland to Rollins.
Which would have been alongside now of the Carnahan Quadrangle.
Yes. Yes, it would probably be right about in the middle of it, just a little bit to the south of it.
So what
west of it.
What else was around there then at that point in time? You mentioned a lot of businesses, but was there a lot of student housing, student apartment rentals?
Well, on Gentry, it was all student apartments. Well, older homes which had been chopped into two, three, four different apartments. And then along Maryland, where was the Italian Village, the trolley car, the shack.
Yeah.
The building next to the shack was there were three or four different bar restaurants that were there and gone. Another one would come. And then right on the corner was Campus Town Grocer.
Oh.
Which used to be, what was that street, which they just made, now they call it Tiger Street.
I know what you mean, yeah.
Something.
Yeah. So now the shack was right next to that also then. So this was all in that one area. What was Trolley Car? Was that an eating place too?
The Trolley Car was... a small eating place, well, a trolley, which had been converted to permanent. And it was mainly breakfast, and I think they closed early afternoon. Kind of the forerunner probably to
Broadway Diner.
Exactly what I was going to say.
Dick Wall is our guest on the Heritage Show. So, I mean, that's a great place. I mean, I don't know if that, as you describe it there, is similar to kind of 9th Street now, isn't it? Wouldn't there be a lot of eating places all stacked together right there?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Of course, there weren't quite as many students back then. But, yes, there was the boisterous Friday nights. And, of course, things were different. You know, the women had to be in their dormitories by 10:30 at night, except for Wednesday night was date night. And I think they didn't have to be in until midnight.
And Wednesday night? Not a Friday or Saturday? So even on the weekends they were having
No, weekends were...
Or freer,
Were much freer. And I can't remember if they had a curfew. Probably they had a curfew. I'm not sure what time it was.
You know, that's not that far back. I mean, think of...
It seemed like yesterday.
Yeah.
However.
So you came here to school.
I came here to school.
From where?
From Festus, Missouri. I went into the Marine Corps for 3 years first. And then I came here, as I say, in 60. And, let's see. After 2 years, somewhere in my second year, I got the opportunity to get into this new restaurant, which is called the Heidelberg. And I was engaged at the time and didn't think that was a thing to do. However, after talking over to my wife, who's been deceased now for 26 years, she was, well, if that's really what you want to do. And so anyway, I was fortunate enough to get in on the ground floor, and here we are.
You know, if you don't mind, I wanted to ask you a question about your wife, because I had a T-shirt for the longest time. Was there a tennis tournament in her honor?
She played a lot of tennis, yeah. And she was really into tennis. So we started a tennis tournament, which we used to raise money. Both the men's and the women's team were both club teams back then. And we raised money for about 6 years. And then it kind of got to be, after every year come January, I had to start working on this tennis tournament. As time went on, more and more people kind of dwindled out. And then it was just an awful lot of work. And I finally said, I hope you don't care, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can just remember I had a T-shirt. Somebody had handed it down for me, yes. Because I wasn't here when that was going on. But I found the T-shirt. I always thought it was pretty cool, so I always wore that T-shirt as often as I could.
Well, she got me very active in the tennis program. My youngest son, he played on the men's team, and actually, I guess it was a recognized sport with the university, because I think my son lettered. I think he still has a letter jacket, if I'm not mistaken. And then they finally dropped the men's and kept the women's because of money or something.
Maybe Title IX or something, where they needed to have equal opportunities. I remember the men's tennis team, though, because it was still around when I was in school here in the mid-70s, and they would play out south of where a huge parking lot is, where at least this is where I remember them playing, where the marching band, Marching Mizzou, sometimes practices now. That's where the courts were at that point in time, and it's near a road where you would swing around to go to the point where the president of the University of Missouri system has his house. It was amazing to go out there,
right,
and watch that. It was very, it's kind of fun to watch that. So when you came to school, did you have an interest in restaurants then, or is this
Oh my, no. Like probably most students, you come to school to get a degree, and hopefully you graduate and you go out and make money. I had absolutely no idea. As I say, when I was in the service, I had worked a little bit in EM clubs and so on, but it certainly was not, it was just to make money, extra money. And then I guess, hopefully, the fellow I was working for at the university, I was doing a good job, and anyway, he wanted me to go over and help him run the thing with him.
Yeah, run the Heidelberg.
Yes.
So your service time, were you sent overseas, or did you do Marines while you were in this country? I'm thinking that would have been, what, late 50s?
This would have been in the late 50s, exactly. And, of course, it was right after Korea and before Vietnam. So I guess the Cold War, if you will. But I remember in practicing, you know, out on the rifle course and so on and so forth. And I said, gee, what are we doing all this stuff for? There's never going to be another war. You know, that's how naive we can be back then.
Wishful thinking.
And then at that age, I guess. And so anyway, but during that time, we did our job. We drank. And we chased women.
Where were you based? Where was this?
I'm sorry?
Where were you based?
Well, I was, first of all, I went through boot camp in San Diego, and then I was stationed at Camp Pendleton. And then I got orders to go overseas and went to Okinawa for a year. And then when I came back, I went to Cherry Point, North Carolina for a year. So I got to see the world, and I had a great time.
Were you drafted, or did you sign up for this?
No, I signed up. And back then, you could sign up for 2, 3, or 4 years. Well, I didn't want to be, what should I say, chicken and take just 2 years. I didn't want to be a lifer and take 4 years, so I compromised and took 3 years. And, you know, back then, that's another thing. You don't realize about a year how long it can be. But I really loved the Marine Corps. I really did.
Why'd you choose Marines as opposed to something else?
Well, that's another long story. A friend of mine was going to go into the Marine Corps. I was going to go into the Navy. My father was in the Navy in World War II. And so anyway, after a long chit-chat, flipping a coin, and so on and so forth, the Marine Corps won, and the rest of it's history.
We're going to move back to talking about restaurants when we come back after these announcements. It's the Heritage Show, and our guest this week is Dick Walls. Stay with us. This is News Talk 1400 KFRU.
This is the KFRU Heritage Series. More coming up on News Talk 1400 KFRU. This is the KFRU Heritage Series.
We're enjoying our visit this morning and this evening as we run the Heritage Show both at 7 and 7 on Sundays at KFRU. This time, Dick Walls is our guest, and we talked about the Italian Village and got off track, but that's not unusual for this show. We like to chase whatever we want to chase, and that's the freedom of this Heritage Show. Italian Village, which used to be on a street called Gentry Street, which doesn't exist anymore. It would be down alongside the Carnahan Quadrangle and near where the Alumni Center is now, which some of us still consider to be the new Alumni Center. It seems new, although it's been there a long time. And all that area through there where all these eating places were, and that had to just be a great atmosphere for the college students at that point in time. I'm trying to think what other... You had the red campus and the white campus. I'm trying to think what else had been built that now we consider to be just standard campus there. That would have been on the edge of campus at that time, wouldn't it? Where you were.
Kind of right in the middle of campus, and there really wasn't. You know, you had that, and of course you have to realize there wasn't near as many students back then as there are now. And but we did have some famous watering holes where they used to congregate on the Wednesdays and the Fridays and the Saturday nights. Oh my gosh, Black and Gold would be one where Jack's Gourmet is now.
Oh yeah, yes, okay, I have heard of that being there. Yeah,
which was very popular, especially on certain nights of the week. And then you had the Stein Club, of course.
Yeah. Heard of that?
I'm trying to think. Well, you used to have Andy's Corner, which would be about where Green Meadows is now, somewhere through there going up Providence Hill.
That would have been out of ways.
Right. As a matter of fact, when Murray's was first built, I think it was called Andy's Corner. Or at least there was a sign inside. It might still be that says Andy's Corner.
I think I've seen that sign someplace, but I never knew what it was referring
to. And then there was another one, and what was it called? It was over on, what's on the street right here, 63, Business 63, but up towards the other end where the student complexes are. And I can't, what?
Yeah, somebody on one of our other heritage shows has actually mentioned that, but I can't remember what the title of it is now either.
I want to say black. No, it wasn't black and gold. Maybe it was.
Students less rowdy back then at that point in time, or did they know how to live it up on a night when they were out? And
I think students have always liked to live it up on certain nights and different occasions and things like that. Maybe we didn't notice it as much. However, I think that there's such instant communication anymore. Anytime anything happens, everybody knows about it, you see. So who knows?
Let's talk about the Heidelberg, because so you left Italian Village, and you said you were invited to come and work for a man who said, oh, we need a restaurant on the other side. And really, people said that they thought where he wanted to open the Heidelberg would someday just be absorbed by the campus and disappear. But what happened was, where the Italian Village was, that disappeared. And the Heidelberg survived.
Exactly. Exactly.
So the early days of the Heidelberg, I'm almost tempted to start at the latter days of the Heidelberg when it burned and go backwards. But let's build up to the fire.
Okay.
So what established the Heidelberg to be such a, because all these other things you're talking about, they've disappeared.
Well, my unbiased opinion was the latter days of the Italian Village and around the campus, most of the places were more, I hate to use this ugly term, but beer joints. And they didn't really push food that much. So anyway, when we opened, and the main reason why we named it the Heidelberg, well, first of all, Heidelberg is a very old university in Germany, and plus the fact we wanted something that people would associate with food and beer. And so anyway, it just hit. If you ever sit around trying to name something, you come up with a thousand of them, and pretty soon you have to write something down. And so anyway, that's what we did.
Were you in on that naming then situation?
Yes. That was in, oh my gosh, 62, I guess. And I started getting so close to the guy. Anyway, I finally insisted. I said, well, look, I'm going to stay in school unless I get a piece of the action. So this is another whole program in itself. Somehow, somehow I wound up with 25%. And so anyway, we opened, and it was instant success from the day we opened.
Really?
Yes. And it's
now where the Heidelberg is now is where that was, correct?
Yes. So when we first opened, there was the Heidelberg. And on the north side of the dining room was a laundromat. It was called Lou's Washateria.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know. The Heidelberg was actually divided into three different sections, and one of the sections was Lou's Washateria, where the posts are in the Heidelberg right now. That was the solid wall there.
Yeah.
So anyway, in 72, somehow I was able to acquire the property. We didn't own the property at the time. And once again, they all lead into big stories, and some of
them
I particularly want to divulge. And but anyway, I was able.
Oh, I wish you would.
I was able to acquire the property. And so I finally let Lou know back next door that I'd give him two more years, and I was going to remodel and take in that space. Well, so anyway, we did, and I think we reopened in, I believe it was 73, and that's the present layout of the restaurant
footprint of
today.
Mm-hmm.
And things went very good. And that's when we were able to get liquor by the drink. We only had 3-2 beer up until that point.
Citywide, huh?
No. Just
you,
the Heidelberg.
Just you. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
And which was great because the places that had 5% and mixed drinks at that time. It was about then when Columbia finally got mixed drinks, if you can believe it or not. Latter 60s, early 70s.
Early 70s, well.
But they had to close at midnight, which I loved.
Because you could stay open later.
Yes. Now, if you were going out at 11 o'clock at night, would you want to go to a place where you got thrown out at 11:45?
No.
No, you'd come to the Heidelberg because you could stay until 1:30. On Sundays, I could sell beer to go, whereas the grocery stores and the liquor stores and the 5% and mixed drink places could not sell anything. So
how do you decide? I mean, you've got those advantages, which you just spelled out.
Mm-hmm.
But the disadvantage of not being able to compete with selection that other places could with the different kinds of liquor. But you eventually got the permission to do the other. And then the rules changed.
So when the rules changed, and when we finally, when I did all this remodeling, I applied for a mixed drink license. And I still remember laying that tape from the corner of the Heidelberg over to the sociology building across the street, and I measured 101 feet, which had to be 100, but the city inspector, he measured 98. I said, oh, my, can't you go around that tire or something? Anyway.
So what's the rule? I mean, you couldn't serve liquor within 100 feet of a school building?
I'm getting pretty close to reopening, and I don't have a license. So, to the best of my knowledge, I had to go to the Board of Curators, and it was a battle, and I don't know if the board is back then, and I can't say this for positive, but once again, my unbiased opinion, the Board of Curators did not like to make decisions back then. They liked to put them off. So anyway, but I finally, after fighting, I got them to give me my license. They gave me
temporary, provisional?
It was permanent.
Yeah.
Yes. And they said, okay, Dick, you can have your license. And I still have that in my file somewhere. And I don't know if I'm still the only person in the history of the university that's ever got a waiver for a license or not. But I do have one, and we've been selling alcohol since then.
You said it was a success from the very first day when you opened up. Why? I mean, do you ever know why something takes off like that? Was it how you targeted the students? I don't know what you did ahead of time.
No, it's not just students. See, we went anybody that comes in the place behaves themselves and spends money. And just like you go into Heidelberg at lunchtime, the average age might be 65. The average age might be 45. But it's students, it's faculty, staff. Now, late at night, it's primarily students, of course.
Was it food?
I think so. It was food, the atmosphere a little bit, and I don't know, it just worked. And then, of course, everything on the other side of campus was through, so where'd you go? And, of course, we didn't have 15 restaurants right down the street like we do now.
Right.
And but now it's still working.
How would you describe to someone who had not been in the Heidelberg at that time when it first opened in its first decade or so what the decor was, what the atmosphere was? What'd you try to make it feel like?
Warm, nothing real fancy, but just welcoming. Tried to have music playing all the time where you didn't hear it, but you did. And
That's pretty interesting. I like that. I like the way you didn't hear it, but you did, because sometimes the music overpowers people.
Also,
it was a good setting for 30 years ago when I was back in school to get some more education. It was a good place where groups of you know, 8 to 12 people could easily sit around at some of the tables and have their little impromptu meetings and class discussions.
There have been quite a few classes held.
Yeah, well, I think we did that a time
or two. I don't want to tell you how many, but and then, of course, when we're going to stop, cut this off before the fire, right?
So. Well, yeah, I mean, we'll talk about the fire, but go ahead. I mean, what other,
no.
I don't want to talk about the fire a lot, but I think that's a marking point there.
Well, we built the upstairs patio, I guess. I don't know what else to call it. But anyway, I remember when we were drawing the plans up to redo it, well, I wanted to make sure we kept the same original, where people walked in the front door. It looked very similar. And then my son, my youngest son, Rusty, who's our general manager now, he comes up with, well, gee, Dad, why don't we build a patio up on the roof? I said, oh, Rusty, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Then I got to thinking through the years, I had thought several times of putting steel beams because the present building couldn't hold another floor. So I said, well, okay, we will. And I'm glad now that we did because it enables us to do a lot of things that we couldn't do before.
All right, let me sneak in a couple of questions about when did the fire occur? What year was that?
Well, the fire occurred in 2004.
Yeah, but not quite 10 years ago from the recording of this interview. Do you still have thoughts of that particular night or when you got the news of this that you can...
I got the news as I'm pulling into Fort Lauderdale on a cruise. The cruise was just finishing. And Mr. Wallace, you have a phone? And I said, okay. And I think it's my son, Rusty, again. He says, Dad, one of the restaurants burned down last night. I said, oh, my gosh. I said, well, and he told me a little bit about it. And I said, well, we're on our way home. I'll be in this evening sometime, and we'll go from there. And, of course, I didn't. When you say burned down, I guess that means burned down, but I didn't think it was burned down. So anyway, we got home, wife and I, and I remember we pulled back in the parking garage, the university parking garage back behind there, up on the top floor, and I looked down, and I could not believe it.
And he wasn't exaggerating. It had burned down.
He was not exaggerating. The front wall was still standing, barely, and that was it.
What was lost in that fire, according to, I mean, what do you remember losing in that fire?
Well, there was a lot of keepsakes as far as the restroom, things you collect through the years, photos and autographs and different newspaper columns, you know, about big games and all these kinds of things. And thank gosh, nothing personal. And a lot of mugs that I had collected through the years. But really, it was not like, I guess, if your home was to burn down and you lose all of your personal type things. It was tough at first, but you get used to it.
Final question then about this, and that is, how did people encourage you to make the Heidelberg again, basically? What kind of response did you get that kind of showed you how important this place was for people?
Well, I guess it had been there for quite a while, and it certainly helped me through my years, adult years, I guess I should say.
People wanted it back.
Very definitely. You know, they wrote on the outside, you know, all kinds of little things. And I got emails from all over the world. I still have some in the collection. One was from London. One was from Malaysia. You know, it was journalism school right across the street. And so I guess those kids are scattered. Those young adults, whatever year they are, they're scattered all over the world. And plus employees that were scattered all over, farmer employees scattered all over the United States. And so said, well, let's do it.
Yeah.
Plus the fact, in my scheme of things, if I ever had a scheme, my game plan was to have both of my boys running the restaurant through their adult life, and that would be their financial. Mm-hmm. And so then when this thing happened, well, gee, I guess we better rebuild it. And so anyway, and they definitely wanted to, and everybody wanted to, so why not? So here we are.
And it's there now. It's one of the real staples of Columbia. I mean, when you think of the Heidelberg, I mean, it's one of the important
most spots. Of my best friends were the early customers, the early helps. I was only 4 years older than my employees, and I was always the old man.
Dick Walls is our guest. We're going to continue with one more segment on our Heritage Show. Stay with us. This is News Talk 1400 KFRU.
This is the KFRU Heritage Series. More coming up on News Talk 1400 KFRU. This is the KFRU Heritage Series.
The Heritage Show today, we're talking about great eating places and great traditions of Columbia, and we talked in their last segment quite a bit about the Heidelberg. Dick Walls is our guest. We talked about the Italian Village early in our program today. People say that running a restaurant is like one of the hardest things that there is to do. I mean, and you've done this for a long time, and you've gone through that a lot. I mean, gosh, is it? I mean, how is restaurant ownership and making a success of restaurants one of the toughest things that you can imagine doing?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's tough. You have to be about half crazy to do it. But it's a different way of life. It's well, just like my family. I have two sisters. Well, one is deceased, but my younger sister, she Mother's Day and Easter, they always had the family over and having a big family. Well, my family, we worked.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else wanted to eat on those days out. Especially in the later years, Mother didn't want to stay in the kitchen all day. So those kinds of things. And then you have, well, as I tell the customers, comes in and they have a complaint about something, and I'll say it's trivial. There were some that were very legitimate, don't mm-hmm. get me wrong. But and I said, gee, you just have to put up with, I'm probably saying this wrong, but anyway, let's back that up. And one of my employees will have a problem. And I said, gee, you've just got to put up with the customer. I've got to put up with the customer and my employees, you see. And but anyway, it's a people business, no doubt about it. And that's the reason why you can take the best chef in the world or the best bartender in the world, and they open their restaurant, but they don't know people, and they don't know, and boom, down they go. But the best one I have a lot of good friends through the years who have been successful in whatever they have done, and they've made some money, and they said, gee, I want to own my own restaurant. So they do. Things don't work out too well. I never have to worry about them again as a competitor. Never. They're so glad to get out of it. And I'm not going to name any names, but there's a bunch of them around through the last.
So how many restaurants have you had a hand in managing, owning in this?
Well, altogether, probably about, I can think of seven right off. But at one time, I had five of them at one time.
Which five did you have at once?
Oh, my. What did you have? The Heidelberg, Boone Tavern.
Yeah.
Sir Winston's in Fulton, Missouri,
which
still have, and Smokehouse, which is at Forum Shopping Center, and then Millstone Lodge. And that was, but of course, I'm only as good as the people that work for me, and I had a good crew. Of course, down at the lake, it was so, well, how I wound up down there, I still don't know. But I was there. I was there for 15 years. And I was back and forth Highway 5 a couple, three times a week. If I lived down there, it wouldn't have been near so bad. But I've had days like Mother's Day I would leave the lake, go to Millstone, which was Millstone, go to Sir Winston's in Fulton, and then hit the Smokehouse, Heidelberg and Boone Tavern, all five of them, in about 3 hours.
Wow.
Just to see what the buffets look like and so on. And then we'd talk about it later in the week. But
Boone Tavern is now Blue for people downtown or in this town who are making that association. Boone Tavern, what a great location. And do you remember the starting of Boone Tavern or your involvement
Tavern? Yes. Matter of fact, my first wife, she didn't particularly want me to do that. And I was already too far in. And so anyway, yes, we did. We started, it used to be a Western Auto store. It was very rough. And it's about like FRU, what it looks like now, compared to if you were out here about 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But anyway, there was a lot of work involved. But that's kind of what I like to do, that was the first one, I guess, I ever really, really started from scratch. And then we had three remodels through the years. But when we first opened, we had people 6-7 deep at the bar every night and blah, blah. But wrong management, and I don't care if they hear, wrong management. And I about lost that place. I remember telling my wife, I said, I better go up there. Hmm. We're going to spend the rest of our lives paying back for this thing. So anyway, little by little, things changed around, and I hired Haas and Trish, who now have Haas's Market, and they did a very good job for me for about 20 years. They more or less ran the place, so that really helped. And so anyway, that one, and then down at the lake, I had good management, but the lake was so different. You'd go from having one bartender during the week to needing about 15 on a Saturday. Mm. And, we had rock and roll bands on the weekends out on the patio, and I had about 72 room unit also. And
wow.
I was only as good as the people who worked for me. So I had to stay on them, or they stayed on me. I'm not sure how it worked. But then before everything crashed, I was fortunate enough to sell. And once again, the guy walked in. He was interested in buying the place. So anyway, that gave me my life back. I didn't have to go back and forth a bunch of times. And then, of course, the Boone Tavern, they were looking for another place.
So Boone Tavern, the great pictures that you had in there, how did those pictures come? I mean, the old-time pictures.
Oh, my. Well, I went to Historical Society. I went to Western Manuscripts, and about every other place, and books and everything, and just anything and everything that I could find that was originally from about 1910 on back, and it was a chore, believe me.
So it was a Western Auto store prior to becoming Boone Tavern.
Yes.
Gosh, that's kind of interesting because I remember the old Western Auto stores. I don't know what year are you talking about? Had it been Western Auto store right up to the time that you bought it?
Right up until it probably sat empty for at least a year.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if it was longer than that or not. And, it was a rough building, believe me. The floors, and they had to be poured with lightweight concrete and all kinds of things. And then we only went to, when I first opened, the far western bay was a bookstore.
Hmm.
So after a year or so, when he found out that they were going to be losing their lease, or they were going to be dropping their lease, he wanted to know if I was interested. Well, sure. So anyway, I expanded into there, but had to tear through the wall, which was about 2 feet wide. Then we had a nicer restaurant. Then the patio, or the vacant land, became available. So then we decided to build a patio. And anyway,
in the courtyard,
little by little, it happened.
Terrific. And people, some people who've been here for a long time will remember 8th Street ran along the side of that.
That's
but
right.
Then the 8th Street got closed. I mean, there's no sign of 8th Street
That's
now.
Right. And the jail used to be right behind us.
Yeah. Yeah, it did, for sure. Personal story. On a New Year's Eve down there, I can't remember what year it was, but this has to go back, 12, 13 years. We had a waitress whose name was Greer. And I asked her if she was named, you won't remember this because you don't remember all your waitresses, but this is just, see, we all have memories about like Heidelberg or Boone Tavern. And my wife and I will always remember that, that young lady that waited on us that particular night. And we were there with another couple. Her name was Greer. And when we had our daughter, we named our daughter's middle name is Greer after that waitress. And we actually, somebody heard me say that story and actually tracked her down. And she came in and I interviewed her over 10 years ago about naming my daughter's middle name after her, the waitress at Boone Tavern.
See how quick the years go?
I know it. They do pass by quite quickly.
Yes, I'll have employees that I will meet 10, 20, 30 years later. And they will say, "Oh, don't you remember this?" Well, I don't remember it, but it's ingrained in their mind, and the same way with customers and so on.
Sure,
yes, I understand exactly what you're saying.
But the thing about it is, I mean, when you do such identifiable and kind of like these traditional places, these heritage places, and I'm not doing that because the show is called Heritage, but like Heidelberg or Boone Tavern. Anybody who spent any time here working or at school, then they say, "Oh yeah, I've got a memory of that. I've got a memory of that." You've created all kinds of memories.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Have you seen? We got a minute and a half left. Is there a difference now in restaurants and their place in society than there would have been 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, or always serving the same pretty general purpose?
I don't think there's really a difference. The only thing I will say. Well, in this whole world, the big guys are gobbling up the little guys. And I think that the chains are becoming more and more and more and more. And there's still a lot of independents out there. And they're trying hard. So I would encourage people, if you can, to try to look through your list of restaurants in this town and try to go see the little guy, and
yeah,
and I certainly think that will help increase the memories and so on.
Those are the treats. You know, I have a lot of good memories about those special places. Well, thank you. I really appreciate you taking the time to come in and visit with us. I know it's just to come in and spend as much time as we ask of the people who come to these programs. It's a nice thing that you do for us to be able to talk about this. Thank you.
Thank you, David. I've enjoyed every bit of it.
Dick Walls has been our guest on this Heritage Show, and hope you've enjoyed it also. Feedback is always welcome at david.lyle@cumulus.com. John Duncan, the producer of the show, this has been the Heritage Show on News Talk 1400 KFRU.
You've been listening to the KFRU Heritage Series, celebrating our history and heritage of Columbia and Boone County. Listen each Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. The KFRU Heritage Series. From News Talk 1400, KFRU, Columbia.